This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. We will no longer be offering tastings, but we're still here for you, though. The lights are on and someone is home, just in a different way. By the way, they're working on a drive-through window. They're shifting focus to getting wines to your doorsteps, your individual quarantine bubbles, both near and far, within this great country in this strange time. We will be offering free shipping on all orders of 6 bottles or more of Hatch Love. Full case orders will receive an additional liquid love note in the form of a treat from Black Swift Vineyards. For locals, call in your orders to the Hatch, 778-755-6013, and we will hook you up and orchestrate your pickup or delivery. You can check all the details at thehatchwines.com. I am Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. Take care of each other. Be kind, please. Thank you. All right, here's the show. This is one of the interviews that I've been waiting a long time to actually bring to you. It was my Christmas present from my daughter, Kate. It was in an envelope, and it said, "Merry Christmas. This gift certificate is valid for mezcal tasting for 2 with Sosima Oliveira of Francancini Mezcal Cooperative, Leodona." Now, Leodona turned out to be Jennifer Furlong, who organizes and leads cultural visits in rural Mexico, specifically Oaxaca. And she was the translator for this interview because we needed a translator. Sosima Oliveira is a legendary figure in Mexico. She is a mezcal master. There's not many female mezcal masters. Her grandmother was a mezcal-making legend. Her aunt taught her everything she knew. And now Sosima is the mezcal master that people want to know about and learn from. She's going to tell you how you can tell great mezcal from big industrial mezcal makers right in the store. She's going to talk about the role of mezcal in Mexico. How, if something bad goes wrong, mezcal is the answer. If something good goes right, mezcal is the answer. Also, if you happen to be having a baby in Mexico, you are given and asked to drink a half a glass of mezcal, and it can induce labor. I'm just saying, these are the tales we're going to pass along. This tasting, by the way, took place in downtown Oaxaca, except it was in a courtyard. You couldn't, you swear you were on a farm. I think there was a couple of chickens. There were certainly the dogs were there. There were palm trees, people in on balconies looking down on us on this table, tasting small, distinct mezcal bowls, little ones, tiny little bowls. And you poured neat, no mix, no ice, no nothing, no spit buckets. My pal and the gentleman married to my daughter, Kate, Pete, was sitting opposite me, took some shots, we're going to include, and gave me his view on what he was tasting. He loves his mezcal. I would like to let you know, especially if you speak or understand Spanish or Portuguese, that in order to fit all of this conversation in, it was long, it was an hour long, I have, for the most part, taken Sosima's voice out of it so that the translation can tell the story. However, if you'd like to hear the whole thing, complete with what she said and what the translator said, simply go to Mulligan Stew Podcast at mulliganstew.ca. It's all there. We're going to give you the whole thing. You hear all the dialogue going on around, all the dogs barking, the whole courtyard scene that happened. So that's on Mulligan Stew, the podcast, music, film, food, and wine. So here you go, with translator Jennifer Furlong, a conversation with a mezcal master, Sosima Oliveira. The second half of the show, we're going to be dealing with what's going on around us. The fact that the coronavirus has closed many restaurants, affected the wineries, and there's a lot of people at home running out of dough and meals. And so in the South Okanagan, we're going to talk to Jennifer Busman, who is the executive director of Okanagan and Soyuz Wine Country, and Derek Ullman, the founder of Oliver Eats, strangely enough, in Oliver. And they have started a hope fund for hospitality workers. Funds are needed to feed winery and hospitality members who've lost their jobs to COVID-19. They are putting out about 200 meals a week, and each meal feeds 4 people. and here's how we can help, all right? The last guest on the show is Jeff Van Geest, the executive chef at Miradora Restaurant at Tinhorn Creek in the South Okanagan. He's going to say what's going on with his peers in the area and how we can help as well. If you're ready, here we go. This is Tasty Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We're heading for Oliver Soyuz Wine Country, and the executive director of that group, Jennifer Bussman, is the executive director. There's 44 wineries in this group, but there's also surrounded by farmers and restaurants. We're going to talk to Derek Ullman, the founder of Oliver Eats, in just a moment, and several others, but we're going to start with Jennifer. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Terry.
How are you? Your health?
My health is fine, and my family is healthy as well, so I'm very fortunate. Going a little crazy, homeschooling a teenage daughter. So, you know, working and schooling simultaneously is a challenge.
And what does the neighborhood, what does the area feel like to you? Are people keeping their spirits up?
I think we've had pretty good spirits, and this week there seems to be a little bit of a change. You know, I think it's starting to take its toll on our locals. You know, the uncertainty of what is going to happen in the future and sure. when the economy is going to reboot is starting to weigh a little heavy on some folks more than others.
So the interesting thing is that I know it's the Oliver Soyuz Wine Country, and it is wine country, but there's also restaurants involved there. There's the workers. There's the whole hospitality industry that goes with the wine business. The wineries are going to keep making wine and hopefully sell it. And so this Hope Fund that started with your help, this is to fund to feed wineries and hospitalities members who have lost their jobs, right?
Well, you know, Terry, we were just about to launch our spring season when the pandemic kind of hit British Columbia. So wineries and local restaurants and restaurant partners and accommodators, small coffee shops, they were all just starting to ramp up, get out there,
sure.
Hiring packages. And all of a sudden, you know, we get the pandemic, you know, notification, and businesses were very quick to adjust, you know, and follow social distancing rules. And then the order actually came that, you know, they weren't allowed to be open. Restaurants weren't allowed to be open. Tasting rooms weren't allowed to be open. And so it's very hard on those small businesses that are so, you know, I guess, so used to having this cycle. You know, spring is kind of ramp up, summer is crazy, fall is crazy, and then winter is kind of quiet, right? So many of our partners and many of our member wineries were just starting to hire back some hospitality and team members that have been parts of those businesses, you know, from anywhere from 5 to 10 years. Some of them new, some of them coming from different parts of the world. It all just got shut down,
yeah.
You know, and it's really tough. Our hospitality industry is something that really contributes to the economy in the South Okanagan. And now all of a sudden that gets turned off, and all of these lovely, hardworking individuals are kind of left in the dark, right? And so, you know, Derek Ullman at Oliver Eats, he works with us a lot on a lot of different projects and events that we do. You know, he was like, it's really important that people can still break bread in their small groups and families.
It's so important.
How can we help them?
So right? important. Just it's so good for the soul. Jennifer Bussman, the executive director of the Oliver Soyuz Wine Country Group. You're going to prepare 200 family meals per week. Do you think you'll need more?
At this point, Terry, we don't know. We do know that we're trying to get the word out. We know that a lot of times it's hard for people who aren't used to asking for help to ask for help. And so, you know, everything we do is anonymous, whether it's taking donations, whether it's people asking for a helping hand. Meals are prepared at the end of the week and can be picked up on Saturday afternoons. Our goal is to, you know, be able to feed 200 or to hand out 200 meals. Those meals feed four people. So whether it's one person eating four times or mm-hmm. it's four people having one meal in one household together, that was our goal. And and Derek does such a great job. We've had lots of support, you know, with local ingredients. So it's healthy, good sustenance that hopefully isn't just nourishing, but it can also feed your soul. That we think that's really important, you know, to still be able to bring that togetherness. And at Oliver Eats, he's you know, practicing IHS standards, and we have safe pickup methods in place. Sure. So people don't have to worry about some of those things.
This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We're heading for Oliver Soyuz Wine Country. Jennifer Bussman is the executive director. This audience would like to know how they can help, and if one of the ways they can help is to buy those wines, then that's all good.
Yes, so there is definitely that option. Just like you know, this is something that is born out of passion, and so we haven't done this before. We're working our way through it and sure. learning lots. And our members are super supportive of it. It will be, they will have a button on their website that shows that they are supporting us. And, you know, so order wine from Oliver Soyuz Wine Country. Very important to, you know, sign up for our newsletter at OliverSoyuzWineCountry.com because we're doing different features and telling you what we're doing with the Hope Fund on a regular basis.
And I can also guarantee you, Jennifer, that if you go to that list of 44 wineries, you are absolutely going to find one of your favorite wines.
Absolutely. At least one.
I mean, you have to be a real stickler if you can't find a winner in those 44.
That's right.
All right. What's your website? How do people get a hold of you?
So you can find us at OliverSoyuz.com. If you're interested in asking questions about the Hope Fund, we have a tab right on our website. That says Hope Fund. It gives you all the information. It also gives you a direct link to our email, hopefund@oliverasoyuz.com. We're checking it on a regular basis, as well as all of our other email addresses. So visit oliverasoyuz.com, and it keeps you up to date with what our members are doing in our region, as well as what we're doing. We're going to be doing some virtual tastings and food and wine pairings, so we're getting kind of excited about that.
It doesn't take much to get excited. Jennifer Bussman, the executive director of the Oliver Soyuz Wine Country Group, 44 wineries. And, of course, we're going to go talk to Derek Uhleman now, the founder of Oliver Eats. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Terry.
This is Tasting Room Radio, a weekly celebration of food, wine, and life with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
An old acquaintance has shown up, Derek Uhleman, the founder of Oliver Eats, strangely enough, in Oliver. And is part of the Hope Fund for the hospitality workers, for the winery workers. You know this area, Derek. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us what it feels like in this day and age, waking up to your pandemic situation up there.
I mean, well, it's clearly surreal. You know, I was had the experience of working through 9/11. I was actually in the patio at Grey Monk at the time. I remember the plane stopping and all the new, you know, the chaos of not understanding what was happening and then sort of the new adjustments afterwards. And, you know, it feels very, very similar here in a place of agriculture and wine and food. We don't really stop. I mean, the crews are still out there because the seasons are going on and guys are planting vines and, you know, hotels are getting ready. And then suddenly overnight it becomes, you know, we lose all the tourists and we lose all of the people that visit and consume what we're producing. So we're still busy, but it's like there's this big presence missing, and you really feel it echo through our community and our social community, like everyone's experiencing, and then even more the economy here.
The guys at Clippers in the Similkameen made the point about a month ago, saying now hopefully you can appreciate what the farmers, what the stores, what part they are in our lives. We take them for granted. Now have a look and appreciate the work that's being done.
Yeah, we really noticed that. And with all the stores and the wineries, and everybody works really well together here. But, you know, the supply chain shifts very quickly. And, you know, like Clippers is a great friend of ours. And it's been interesting to start filling gaps and seeing some of our local farmers stop sending things abroad. And like Oliver Eats, for example, we're taking in stuff from the Ford family farm and backyard farms, our good friend Chef Chris on Poydonk.
Sure.
Because everything just shifts into need Jeff Van Geest at Miradoro has been crucial in helping us navigate the waters of as an industry, and again, Kristen Huidong, and just understanding what we were able to do and how to do it safely. I service a lot of the school districts, the things like Fortis and the hospital even. So how do we approach that with people that want to buy everything from platters to lunches for those groups? So it's been a real big change. I'm fortunate the South Okanagan people really embrace takeout in a positive way. So we're seeing, you know, a lot of made dinners go out for, you know, we're putting out probably 200 or 300 dinners a week right now, just to the general population. And then so that sort of keyed into us starting to think about who wasn't getting fed in our community.
True. Derek Ullman is the founder of Oliver Eats. The Hope Fund hopes to package 200 family meals per week for families, you know, workers who have been laid off because of the COVID-19 situation. Is that going to be enough, do you think?
You know, it's hard to gauge. Like right now, I don't think the community is used to asking for help, so we haven't had a huge demand. We've had a lot of people interested and a lot of people learning about it.
Pride has something to do with that as well, I think.
I think so. I think a lot of people in our industry, whether it's wine or food, are, you know, we're here because we also like to serve and like to be hospitable. And so it's hard on the other side to go ask. We want to ask how to help, but not how to necessarily, you know, be helped. So I think, you know, I'm relying on the community to sort of identify within itself who needs some, maybe an extra meal, and then hopefully those people are going to come out, because I don't think this is a short-term problem. And one of the things, being in the South here, you know, we're small communities, 5,000 or 6,000 people in Osoyoos, and the same in Oliver, and going up the valley in Aramata, all these little great towns that have wine focus and agriculture. And, you know, we've all faced fires in the last few years and floods. And I felt, you know, talking with Oliver Osoyoos Winery Association, you know, what are we going to do for not just COVID, but the other things that might come down the pipe this summer? And how can we be prepared ourselves and not just rely on, you know, overwhelming government if they're in need, and mitigating those risks and having some ways in place that we could feed people if they needed it?
Derek Ullman is the founder of Oliver Eats. How can this audience help? What can they do for you?
You know, the biggest thing right now is to stay informed about what's going on up here. Understand that we're all still here producing all the wine that you're going to enjoy. And in doing so for the Hope Fund, we're accepting donations through the wineries of the Oliver Osoyoos Winery Association. So oliverosoyoos.com. You can look that up, the Oliver Osoyoos Winery Association website, and donate through that. We're going to have some more information on our website, OliverEats.com, and then all our social media feeds right now have the Hope Fund information up. We're fortunate here that we have the Oliver Food Bank across the street, and the Osoyoos Food Bank, and there's a church in Osoyoos that we work with. So any food that we're unable to sort of designate into our, one of the things, our catering kitchen isn't working right now because there's not a lot of events. So we're sort of dedicating that space to producing that family meal. And then we can receive product in that form or from outside sources. Sure. And if we can't use it, then we pass it on to the food bank.
It's lives, it's souls we're talking about. I know that we're just having a conversation, but we're talking about people's lives here. So folks, keep that in mind. Last question, Derek, how's the food bank doing up there?
Our food bank has an amazing group. One of the things about the South Okanagan is the volunteer group, and everywhere in British Columbia, we're just so great at the communities coming together. You know, I applaud the food bank's done really, really well. It's still maintaining their systems and getting the food out every week. But everyone is, I think, in a long game, especially as we, you know, think through the summer and the fall. You know, we're going to need to get these systems to work and make sure that nobody follows through, because it's like, to me, COVID-19 is exponential. So is our vulnerability as a community. So want to make sure that nobody falls through the cracks.
Exactly that. How do people get a hold of you? Best contact?
hello@olivereats.com is how we take information for Oliver Eats. And we've got a whole order desk that can filter to the right person there.
Okay. We wish you the best of luck. And I can't wait to walk through the front door.
Thanks so much. We can't wait to welcome everyone back. And just to remind everyone, too, that Oliver and the Osoyoos area will continue to make all the delicious things that everyone enjoys.
Keep those farmers happy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Derek Ullman is the founder of Oliver Eats. go and find him. He gave you the information. We'll put it on our website as well. Thank you, Derek.
Thank you.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. We will no longer be offering tastings, but we're still here for you, though. The lights are on and someone is home, just in a different way. By the way, they're working on a drive-through window. They're shifting focus to getting wines to your doorsteps, your individual quarantine bubbles, both near and far, within this great country in this strange time. We will be offering free shipping on all orders of 6 bottles or more of Hatch Love. Full case orders will receive an additional liquid love note in the form of a treat from Black Swift Vineyards. For locals, call in your orders to the Hatch, 778-755-6013, and we will hook you up and orchestrate your pickup or delivery. You can check all the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Here's a heads up on what's going on there now. The Wine Club, they're offering a 10% discount on all purchases from the online store, on all case orders from the online store, free shipping to Vancouver Island and the Lower Mainland, 50% discounted shipping to the rest of Canada. The restaurant is open noon to 7 p.m. Friday to Sunday for pickup. Check their website for menu and pickup details. If you want to pick up your online wine order from the tasting room, that's between 3 and 4:30 Monday to Thursday. Online order pickup from the restaurant, 12 noon to 7 p.m. Friday to Sunday. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. As promised, we've gone looking for Jeff Van Geest. And we have found, well, I'm assuming, Jeff, that we have found you at Miradouro, which is your home away from home, or are you cooking from home?
I am on my way to Miradouro. We're very much open. Well, very much. We're halfway open. And I'm still cooking there quite a bit, not as much as I normally am.
What does the new normal look like for you?
It's very strange. Takeout and delivery. Doing a little bit of takeout. We're basically a pizzeria now. We're doing pies and with the odd other thing here and there. You can even buy duck fat to cook with at home, handmade pastas, things like that.
How are the farmers doing?
It's hard to say right now because really...
it's just starting, isn't it?
They're just getting going. It's not... I'm hoping a lot of them will be able to adapt to CSA, like home delivery sort of thing. The restaurants aren't going to sustain them this year. I will do what I can to buy from the farmers, but you know, when my business is down as much as it is, there's only so much I can buy from them.
I mean, I think we've all seen those shots of in the States of dairy farmers pouring milk out and leaving mountains of corn in the fields. It disturbs all of us who know that there are people who could use that.
It really does. And I hate food waste so much. And, you know, I got to think there's a better way of dealing with it than that.
Okay. I know you are the pride of Niagara. Have you talked to your family and friends back east? How are they doing?
Yeah, my family quite a bit. And then I've got a couple cook friends, chef friends back there that I've, chatted with a little bit. But family's doing well. Even my parents are retired, so they're kind of set up for this.
Okay.
And, Same deal as out here, I'd say.
I know that you also went through John Bishop's. John is now officially retired, of course. You went through his kitchen, and he was the first chef that I can remember who was a flat-out forager and dragged his peers up north on the coast in Campbell River to go forage anything in the forest. Are you foraging up there?
We will be soon. Well, that's not true. I mean, I was thinking mushrooms. We will be picking morels soon.
Sure.
We are getting wild asparagus here. We're getting wild stinging nettles here. The watercress is starting to form up a little bit. So yeah, I have been. Mostly greens at this point.
Jeff Van Geest, by the way, the executive chef at Miradouro at Tinhorn Creek. How are you involved with the Hope Fund, Oliver Soyuz?
Yeah, so the Oliver Soyuz Winery Association is organizing it. And what we will be doing as chefs is taking turns each week to prepare this family meal.
Sure.
The different chefs in the area... with donations of both money and product, and our own time and product, putting together, hearty, nutritional meals to feed our people in the industry that are struggling right now.
Does your gut tell you when this might start to become adaptable, somewhat normal, at least head towards normal?
You know, we think about this and we talk about this daily, constantly. You know, we're like everybody else. We're paying attention to what's going on. We want to do things right when we do start to do things. What Dr. Bonnie Henry said yesterday about consulting with restaurants about changing gears is promising. I mean, we don't want to do this any quicker than is safe, but at the same time, we'd like to get back to some sort of business.
Well, I mean, if most restaurants can only seat half full, it's going to be a tough go.
It is going to be a tough go. It'll be harder for some than others. You know, a restaurant like ours, we're a seasonal restaurant, and we're good at changing gears.
Yep.
We're used to operating at half speed in the winter. I feel pretty confident that we can pull this off. I worry about people that pay high Vancouver rents and whatnot when they can only do 20, 30 people at a time. It's really going to take some creative thinking. But the people in my industry they're survivors, and they're extremely hardworking, and they're creative thinkers. And I think for the most part, we're going to get through this as an industry. I know there will be some attrition, but I think, yeah, we adapt and we survive.
Hey, Jeff, is it any easier for the Vancouver restaurants or any easier for the Okanagan restaurants to survive, or are they all in the same boat?
I mean, I think we have different sets of challenges and advantages. I'd say we're all in the same boat, but on a different lake, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Fishing analogy for you.
There you go.
The smart ones and the hardworking ones will survive for the most part. I have hope. It doesn't mean I don't have this, like, nagging fear. It's so dark, but, you know, I do have a nagging fear. We are going to lose people. Not people. We are going to lose businesses.
Sure.
And, it is going to be, the industry is going to be trimmed back. I just hope that that's as minimal as possible.
All right, last question, Jeff Van Geest, Muradoro. Can this audience do to help, no matter where they're listening, whether they're on the coast or in their Alberta or, you know, halfway across the country, what can they do to help the restaurants and conversely the wineries now?
I mean, I think a lot of it's been talked about already, by takeout or delivery. Buy a gift certificate for somebody. Buy a gift certificate for somebody that's, you know, working on the front lines of this crisis. But other things too. For God's sakes, don't leave a nasty Yelp review.
Like, yep.
Our mental health is tenuous right now. You know, these are challenging times. The last thing anyone wants to read is a nasty Yelp review. If you have a problem with something at a restaurant, I think the best thing you can do is address it personally.
Just be kind. Just be kind.
Be kind.
Be kind.
Just like outside of restaurants, just like in normal life, we all need to be super kind to each other right now. The world needs more of that, and restaurant people need more of that. Gift certificates, buy takeout, and what else can you do right now? That's about it.
Okay.
And then when things get going again, support your local restaurants. With all due respect to the chain restaurants, support the independents. I mean, I know I've got peers in restaurants, too. I want to see all of these people working. But I think that the little guys are going to have a harder time surviving this.
Yep. Same thing with the wineries.
And then one more thing going forward, and this is something I think it's sort of like pruning a tree. You know, the restaurant industry is going to be pruned back, but I think strong growth will come out of this. We need to address the wages of our workers, and the only way to do that is restaurants will at some point have to start charging more money. We're charging the same for an entree now that we were 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The public needs to wrap their head around the fact that restaurants have been underpriced for a long time. And if we want to pay our people a living and sustainable wage and maybe give them benefits and stuff like that, our customers need to be willing to support that.
Okay. That's a whole nother matter. You know that.
That's a whole other conversation. Yeah.
Okay.
Anytime you want to talk about it.
I know you're going fishing.
Yep.
And watch your tip.
Yep.
Check your knots.
Yep.
And I hope, well, if it rains, it's going to be, I just want just some feedback on how the fishing went, okay?
I'll let you know.
All right. And pack a sandwich.
Absolutely. And toilet paper.
Jeff Van Geest, Miradaro Restaurant.
Nice to talk to you.
Tin Horn Creek in the South Okanagan. Wonderful chef. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. You take care.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Here's a heads up on what's going on there now. The Wine Club, they're offering a 10% discount on all purchases from the online store, on all case orders from the online store, free shipping to Vancouver Island and the Lower Mainland, 50% discounted shipping to the rest of Canada. The restaurant is open noon to 7 p.m. Friday to Sunday for pickup. Check their website for menu and pickup details. If you want to pick up your online wine order from the tasting room, that's between 3 and 4:30 Monday to Thursday. Online order pickup from the restaurant, 12 noon to 7 p.m. Friday to Sunday. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Just a word from Row 14. Kevin sent a note saying, we were open last weekend, but have now decided to close until the pandemic is over. The best way to communicate is through social media, email, or phone calls. We decided not to do takeout, as that's really not our style. And chef and partner Derek Gray said, now more than ever, we see how valuable, integral, and fragile our food system really is. We at Row 14 ask that you support your local farmer, grower, husbandry in times of need. Please remember to be kind to others, wash your hands, partake in laughter, and be safe. Derek Gray. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, our wine club events that we're planning for April and May have now been canceled or postponed, but we're going to go ahead with our regular wine club shipments. We're hoping that this is all temporary, but are making plans for it to last through the season. We want to encourage people to stay safe, be smart, and support local when possible. Buy from small family-owned producers and retailers who need help in these strange days. Take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. One more thing, the suites are still open for business. Welcome back. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is year 12 of this show, which started in a studio in a barn on the Naramata Bench. Now, this next guest, Sosima Olivera, is legendary in Mexico, specifically Oaxaca. She is a mezcal master. She watches over the mezcal plants. She works hand in hand with her teams, male and female, in the fields. It's an old school way of making spirits, unlike anywhere else in the world. And she's going to walk us through and taste us through some amazing mezcal. It's sometimes likened to tequila, it's lined up against tequila bottles in the stores. You might mix it with a margarita when you're desperate, but for the most part, it's consumed neat in small, beautiful mouthfuls. And I'm proud and honored to have her on the show. The complete interview with the translation and everything, all the original conversation, can be found at Mulligan Stew Podcast, Music, Film, Food, and Wine on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts. Please enjoy this and welcome. I ask Sosima to tell us about herself.
Mi nombre es Sosima Olivera y soy de la región Chontal Alta, un poco ubicando el estado de Oaxaca. Es en la parte sur. Estoy como en el colindo con el Istmo, con los Mijes y en la costa, con la parte de la costa y los Mijes.
Sosima Olivera, and she's from the Chontal region, the High Chontal region, which is bordering the Istmo, the Mije region, and the Costa region.
Y bueno, soy la cuarta generación de mi familia que hace mezcal. Soy una, me ha tocado la cuarta generación, y yo creo que en esta ocasión soy de las mujeres de la familia que estamos en el tema del mezcal.
So she's a fourth generation distiller in mezcal in her family, and she's part of this generation where women are coming to the forefront in mezcal distillation.
Has it been a while to get there?
Pues primero, yo creo que ha sido bastante interesante toda una cosmovisión de los pueblos.
So it's been a very interesting journey for her because when she's talking about mezcal, she's not just talking about the drink, she's talking about the whole cultural context of the village. So she uses the word with a lot of precision when she talks about traditional mezcal or ancestral mezcal, that part for her is very important. So it's a whole cosmovision or a whole worldview surrounding mezcal that for her has been the journey.
When did she first start and how many women were making mezcal then?
Entonces me tocó convivir con ella, otra tía que le gustaba tomar mezcal, también me tocó con ellas como eran mis maestras, y siempre decía, cuando yo sea grande voy a ser como ellas. Entonces eran un referente para mí bastante importante.
Her grandma was a widow, and she was part of the distilling process, and her aunt also really liked to drink mezcal, so they were like reference points for her and her family of women who were involved in mezcal and like to drink mezcal. And when she was young, she said that she wanted to be like them.
And how many women are there today making mezcal?
So historically, women have always been part of the process. So let's not confuse that women are now at the forefront of the process. Women have always been part of the production of mezcal, always, in its history. So this is the newest, and this is the generation where currently women are part of the forefront of they're taking that front position. And she would say that, like her in this role of being at the forefront, there are maybe 20 or so women. Okay.
Oaxaca es bastante grande. En cada región se hacen mezcales, pero se hacen mezcales de norte a sur, de Durango, Michoacán, Guerrero, Puebla, México. Ah, se me olvida que tienes que
estar. I have to interrupt her constantly, which I feel bad, but otherwise it's hard to capture everything. So she's saying it's really important that she feels like the women can talk about their history and their stories in mezcal, because in each region it's a different story and it's a different way of making mezcal. So from one region to the next in Oaxaca, there's a difference, and there's a difference in the varieties of agave or maguey that grow in those regions, let alone in other states of Mexico. There's an entirely different process and an entirely different story behind mezcal. So in other states like Durango, Guerrero, Michoacán, Puebla, some of the states in the north, they each have their own story and their own ways of making mezcal.
We're in Oaxaca, and we're tasting with a maestro, Josima Oliveira. And Jennifer Furlong are my guests, along with Pete Havercroft, who's along for the ride and was invited to share this table.
¿En la actualidad usted realiza todo este proceso en el pueblo todavía o una parte?
So she was asking if Sosie does the whole process from the plant to the bottle, like if she does part of it here in the city, if she does the whole process from the village to the city. And Sosie was saying that yes, they're cooperative. So they're a cooperative of families that grow maguey. And as that cooperative, that vision was to be able to, from the plant to the bottle, be in charge of that process and not delegate parts of that process, or often the people in the villages are excluded from the final product and from the sales. So they're taking charge of the entire trajectory of that process.
Y bueno, la cooperativa está en dos regiones ahora donde surge, que es en La Chontal y en Sola de Vega.
So they have their cooperative consists of two geographic locations that each have their own palenque in two different regions. One is in the Chontal region and one is in Sola de Vega. So in Sola de Vega, they use certain types of magueys that are endemic to that region. And in the Chontal region, they use different types of magueys that are endemic to that region.
Are they very different one from the other?
Sí, son muy distintos los magueys.
Sí, ahorita vamos a probar, de hecho.
Terroir, it's terroir. It's like in wine growing, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll try it shortly and you'll notice some of the differences, but there's such a breadth of difference amongst them. So the cooperative consists of four families in one region and four families in the other region. And part of the reason why they created the space was to allow more families from the regions to participate in the mezcal production. And as a cooperative, their structure, I mean, is not entirely horizontal. Like each family participates in the work, but they have a president, they have a treasurer, and they have a secretary.
We're in Oaxaca, and we're tasting with a maestro, Josima Oliveira, and Jennifer Furlong are my guests, along with Pete Havercroft, who's who's along for the ride and was invited to share this table. Are these the Chontal mezcaleros?
Son los mezcaleros chontales.
Sí. Mm-hmm.
The three hummingbirds?
Ah, los tres colibríes.
La cooperativa se llama Tres Colibrí. Aquí, o sea, la marca se llama Fane Cancini, y la cooperativa se llama Tres Colibrí.
So their cooperative is called Tres Colibrí, Three Hummingbirds, and their brand of their mezcal is Fane Cancini.
Fane Cancini.
Fane Cancini.
Fane Cancini. So it's the Three Hummingbirds. Ah, the third day of the month, and then the month is called Colibrí Hummingbird.
Okay.
We're going to try three from the state of Oaxaca, two from the region of Sola de Vega, one from the Chontal region, and then one from Michoacán from another state.
So what are the names?
Los nombres de los magueyes.
Los nombres de los magueyes es aquí hay un coyote.
One is called Coyote.
Luego
Coyote.
Hice una mezcla de dos magueyes diferentes, Sierra Negra con Arroqueño.
One is a mix of two different types of agave or maguey. One of them is called Sierra Negra and one is called Arroqueño.
Y luego uno silvestre de la Chontal, que es el Chato.
There's a wild variety from the Chontal region that's called Chato.
Y luego una americana de Michoacán.
And then the one from Michoacán state is called Americana. American.
Son los cuatro mezcales que vamos a probar.
If you haven't tried a lot of mezcal, it's also important as we taste it, like you're going to be able to differentiate what are the properties of a mezcal ancestral or tradicional, like a traditional or ancestral mezcal, versus an industrial mezcal, which are very different processes.
Actually, what it is it's not so much that we can't try it, it's we can't get our hands on it. You have to come here. What should the nose tell you and what should the mouth tell you?
¿Qué está buscando cuando lo huele y qué le está buscando cuando lo prueban? One is distilled in a clay pot and one is distilled in copper. And 80% of what's distilled in Oaxaca is generally distilled in copper, and 20% of what's distilled in Oaxaca still utilizes the traditional clay pot method. So we're going to do an exercise so that you can taste amongst those two different distillation methods. Para que puedo traducirlo bien,
pueden oler el primer ejercicio que vamos a hacer es oler el primero y oler el segundo.
So she wants you to smell between the two of them and note what you smell differently between the two of them.
What the first one is?
La primera
es coyote.
It's the coyotas, the type of agave.
Un agave silvestre.
It's wild.
Endémico de Sola de Vega.
It's typical in the Sola de Vega region. It's endemic there.
Que tarda 6 años en crecer.
It requires 6 years to grow the plant.
Wow.
And it's distilled in a clay pot.
Y es un mezcal que se destiló en cobre. Diez.
So the second one is called a chato. ¿Crezca en cuántos años?
10.
It requires 10 years for the plant to grow to maturation. It's from the Chontal region. Family is an agave semaniano.
Semaniana.
It's like another example of a family. So it would be the genus, right? Above the species. Testing my science, my middle school science.
We're going deep.
Yeah. Digo, estoy intentando acordar en la secundaria cuáles categorías va a cada cosa, pero se me va. They're two completely different products because they're from two different regions, they're from two different types of agaves, and they're from two different distillation methods, and yet they're both mezcal. But the important exercise here is to be able to distinguish differences in the aromas and the flavors and to know which one was distilled in a clay pot versus which one is distilled in copper.
That's the voice of Jennifer Furlong, who is our translator. What's the name of your company? You have a travel company?
Tlayudona. Tlayudona with a T. T-L-A-Y-U-D-O-N-A. Tlayudona.
Do you do tours?
We do cultural experiences.
Of course you do. It's not a tour. It's a cultural experience.
We don't walk you anywhere. I mean, we immerse you in the experience.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Just a word from Row 14. Kevin sent a note saying, we were open last weekend, but have now decided to close until the pandemic is over. The best way to communicate is through social media, email, or phone calls. We decided not to do takeout, as that's really not our style. And chef and partner Derek Gray said, "Now more than ever, we see how valuable, integral, and fragile our food system really is. We at Row 14 ask that you support your local farmer, grower, husbandry in times of need. Please remember to be kind to others, wash your hands, partake in laughter, and be safe." Derek Gray. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, "Our wine club events that we're planning for April and May have now been canceled or postponed, but we're going to go ahead with our regular wine club shipments. We're hoping that this is all temporary, but are making plans for it to last through the season. We want to encourage people to stay safe, be smart, and support local when possible. Buy from small family-owned producers and retailers who need help in these strange days." Take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. One more thing, the suites are still open for business. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13 on the Golden Mile. At Road 13, they are temporarily suspending tastings in the lounge and the castle and winery tours. And to Club 13 members and guests, Road 13 is accommodating your requests for purchase with minimal interruption. You can pick up your wines at the winery and load it into your vehicle by the staff, or they can arrange complimentary shipping by courier directly to your home or location of your preference. The goal at Road 13 is to make it as seamless as possible. You can find all the information you need and updates at road13vineyards.com. We're in Oaxaca, and we're tasting with a maestro. Josima Oliveira and Jennifer Furlong are my guests, along with Pete Havercroft, who's along for the ride and was invited to share this table. I'm trying not to go crazy with questions, but at some point, I'd love to know how to read correctly a mezcal bottle, what you look for, because there's a lot of words there with a lot of different bottles.
Paso número uno. So primero, el aroma.
The first step is the aroma. You can see the line of the fat.
Yes.
That's like that oil content. And so if it's watered down, it won't do that.
So it's almost like tears.
Y luego también otra vez ver, hacemos este ejercicio para ver el grado de alcohol que tiene nuestra bebida. Entonces nosotros no usamos la cantidad.
She just poured some in a bowl, and she's got a straw, a cane, and she's inhaled all of it into the cane, and then she draws, and then she picks it up, and it draws out.
So she's saying the important thing here is to look at the alcohol content. And for a long time, we didn't have like a scientific apparatus.
It's the bubbles, right?
That would test. So the bubbles cover the entire surface,
yes,
and they stay there. And that signifies that it has the appropriate alcohol content.
Si yo hago este mismo ejercicio con un mezcal industrial, no me va a hacer esas perlas.
So if you conduct this exercise with an industrial mezcal, it won't create those bubbles, which they call the pearls.
Wow.
So she's saying basically instead of looking at the label on the bottle, like you want to be looking at the product and look at what it does in the glass.
So let me get this right. All we need is a bowl, a bottle, and a cane.
Entonces, lo mismo que las otras.
With a small
dice,
hole
cuando
in
entran
it.
Al bar, entonces necesitan una jícara y un
carrito. I'll go pick one up at the store.
Con la botella.
Okay, shake the bottle.
Yeah, so with the bottle, you can see the bubbles. If it's an industrial mezcal, it won't do that.
See, okay.
Uno tiene que tomar de lo mejor de la tierra, y las perlas son lo mejor.
So you have to drink the best that this earth can provide, and the pearls are the best that this earth can provide, and not necessarily the pearls that you wear around your neck.
Is out there, they would say that mezcal is male. Is mezcal feminine?
En la parte de sembrar es como muy femenino.
Is that a familial affair, a group, a teamwork effort, and that there's a harmony there between women's work and men's work. So, for example, the planting, they consider to be very feminine. And then there's a part that requires like a lot of literally heavy lifting that's traditionally masculine. And they look at it as the joined effort of those both parts.
So it's both?
Yes.
Mira, este es un mezcal comercial.
Mira, es un comercial mezcal.
Mira, mira, no hace perlas.
Okay, so she brought there's a commercial mezcal just brought out. She shook the bottle. There are no bubbles at the top. Can you imagine going into a store and shaking all the bottles?
That's what you're gonna have to do when you go back.
Todos son blancos.
shake the bottle.
She is asking
an important question. Why is that color, and why do the industrial ones look like that?
Because we want it to look like that. We, the consumer, want that.
Well, the industrial ones, yeah, based on like a it's like a dye, so it shouldn't look like that. Like a real mezcal.
So in other words, what we have on the table here is a clear liquid, almost like water.
Yeah.
But the commercial bottle that came out had a sort of a golden hue about it.
I want to try it. It's terrible. Now when I go to the U.S. and people are like, oh, I have mezcal.
By the way, the nose on the commercial mezcal is non-existent.
It has no personality. It has nothing.
Oh, they mess with it. They mess around with it.
Dice que está alterado. Ni siquiera está puro. So it has a color and a flavor, like an additional flavor. Yeah, they add like smokiness, like in a drop. Yeah.
Is she making organic mezcal?
Si estás como produciendo mezcal orgánico,
echándole abono de hojas, de la caca de ganado.
The plants are grown completely artisanally and organically. There are no chemicals added at any point of this process, and the plants are taken care of. And we go out there to the campo, like, and we see the men that they know each plant, and they take care of each plant depending on its stage and its age. And she says that they use a mixture of like organic compost. That's like old leaves from previous distillations. It's like the...
It's all the pulp?
The cow poop, basically. Yeah, the used pulp. And different... They use different things for pests that are natural.
And so. That's always the way it's been?
Y siempre ha sido así, como el mezcal ancestral. So in the 80s, still, it was much more pure of a process. And that her mom, for example, distilled in the hide of a cow. Fermented in the hide of a cow and then distilled in clay pots. And in the 80s, that was typical of anywhere that distilled. They fermented in the cow hides and they distilled in clay pots. And there weren't other innovations at that point.
Wow. Wow. It's not just her and us. It's the dogs. It's the people going around, a little community in here.
This is ambiente, los perros, como toda me emociona.
And it's Friday.
Y es viernes.
Es viernes. El cuerpo lo sabe.
And the body knows.
The body knows, the mind follows.
Entonces, hace 10 años que la bebida como tal.
We're in Oaxaca, and we're tasting with a maestro. Josima Oliveira. And Jennifer Furlong are my guests, along with Pete Havercroft, who's along for the ride and was invited to share this table.
So 10 years ago, people were not knowing how to drink mezcal. They just wanted to get drunk, and they saw the alcohol, and they just wanted to drink it. So she said it's been her 10-year sort of labor of love and mission to talk to people about the history of mezcal, about the culture of drinking it, about the properties, and teaching people how to drink mezcal.
I know that mezcal is part of the history of Mexico. How much is it part of the culture?
Durante toda tu vida lo usas, y cuando mueres te despiden con un mezcal.
In the village life, everything revolves around mezcal, or mezcal is part of everything. And there's an expression in Oaxaca that's very common, por todo...
Para todo mal,
mezcal, para todo bien también. So for anything bad, you can remedy it by drinking mezcal. For anything good, you can celebrate it by drinking mezcal. So that's like the very common expression in Oaxaca. And she's saying it's literally true. Like every part, every life stage is celebrated with mezcal. So when you're born, it's like you're celebrated with mezcal. Como que las mujeres en el parto, dices.
Ajá, en la parte medicinal, en la parte ritual. O sea, en el contexto de toda la vida, tiene participación en los eventos más importantes de la vida.
In terms of medicine, in terms of ritual, in terms of any life stages, the most important moments are inextricably linked to mezcal.
Wow. Weddings, funerals?
Las bodas, los funerales.
Holidays?
Obviously, everything. So the women, when they're in labor, they're given mezcal to provoke, like, the act of labor.
Yes.
Creo que las mujeres cuando están en como...
La partera que hace el trabajo de ayudar a las señoras que van a parir, es de entrada una dosis de mezcal de este tamaño.
No. Sí. Hold on, she's just made a measurement on a glass about half full.
Con piloncillo, que es un energetizante y sedante a la vez.
So when women are in labor, to provoke the act of labor, they give them like a half of a real glass, not a like a shot glass, a half of a real glass of mezcal to provoke the labor, and it works as like a stimulant and a numbing agent at the same time. And they add piloncillo, which is like a natural brown sugar, so it as an energizer.
Do you have children?
¿Tienes hijos?
Sí, tres.
Right. So?
Y la, yo creo que el nosotros que somos de los pueblos allá, que no había complicaciones, las complicaciones están en la cabeza.
So for them, like, they're for the women in the villages that have not been so heavily exposed to this Eurocentric mindset, for them, birth was a very natural thing, and they didn't come with these complexes about birth. It was just very natural and just something that you did, and they feel like those complexes are in the mind.
I talk in wine terms because that's usually what I'm around.
The attack,
how it approaches the mouth, it went straight down the middle of my head, so like a river.
Como en medio, como un río.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Muy bien, muy
the
bien.
Second, more subtle for
el
me.
Segundo, más útil para él. Mm-hmm. Either of you.
Definitely the first one was very good, and the second one, it almost seemed a bit more smoky up front, but kind of subtler going down. Yeah.
So the ones that are distilled in barro, in clay, because it's earth, it's porous, and so it's that smokiness is coming because there's wood being burnt under it that's firing, you know, the distillation process that's heating it up, and so that smokiness is going through that porous surface, and your mezcal is acquiring part of that flavor, where if it's distilled in copper, it's an impermeable receptacle. It's not acquiring any of that smokiness. So Susie was saying that she likes to tell people that when they come here to the bodega, which you'll see shortly over there, that they have mezcales from different states, and she feels like you're traveling around Mexico. So right now, you are fortunate enough to travel to Michoacán with the next mezcal. So there will be one mezcal from Sola de Vega region that was distilled in clay pots, and then one mezcal from Michoacán that was also distilled in clay pots but uses wood above it so that when it... when it condenses, that it's condensing along wood, which is different than something they would do here in Oaxaca.
Does mezcal get any better in the glass after it's been bottled?
Tiene 8 años.
Yes, huele, so you're going to try this one that's been sitting there for 8 years.
8 years in bottle?
So it's been sitting there for 8 years in the bottle here.
We're in Oaxaca, and we're tasting with a maestro, Josima Oliveira, and Jennifer Furlong are my guests, along with Pete Havercroft. At the very back of that, a sort of a caramel, something sort of honeyed.
Alguien como cuando lo prueba este de Michoacán, como prueba algo de caramelo al último, como en mi helado.
Es muy dulce, sabe mucha miel.
It's very flavorful, like honey.
También tiene como al fondo en el retrogusto, como mantequilla.
In the aftertaste, it also has like a buttery aftertaste. She mentioned that it tastes so different than the previous two. And so she's saying that, yes, like part of what makes Mexico so rich is that difference from one region to the other. The way people dress, what they eat, you know, how they distill their mezcal, the biodiversity of the plant life in the different regions. Everything is completely different. So she feels like that's emblematic of Mexico, that you go from one region to the other and there are so many differences. So she feels like it might be a personal fixation of hers because she likes older things, but she feels personally like that those 8 or 10 year old mezcales have created like a just much more docile, like subtle profile, and she feels like she appreciates them more. This one has a story because a friend of hers created a mezcaleria, like a mezcal bar in Mexico City. And she was bringing him, he asked her to bring her mezcales from Oaxaca. And then he was bringing mezcales from other states. And that was their like point of entry, like through Mexico City. And that business failed at the end of the day. So she ended up like accumulating, acquiring the mezcales from the other states.
Jennifer Furlong is our translator. Couldn't do this without it.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. Say that again. Peter?
Surprised how not smoky most of those were.
It's what we're used to,
yeah.
Right?
You think smoky and peppery when you think mezcal.
Where are we getting that smoky? Are they just messing with...
From the industrial? So I think because that industry was largely based on mimicking tequila and mimicking other flavors, like Sosie said, like the industrial varieties will add flavorings, will add color, so
this is,
will add...
This is straight up agave.
Yeah, so this 100%. Is, there's nothing else. Even when they're fermenting, they don't add any yeasts. It's the natural yeasts that are in the water and the air that ferment by themselves. So there's literally nothing else added to this at any point along the process.
How is the audience going to be able to find her products? Is she can you buy? Can they be shipped?
So, Sosie, pregunta, pues, ¿cómo puede encontrar la gente tu producto? ¿En dónde? ¿Cómo se los puede mandar como internacional o cómo?
Pues ya se van a ir a Denver.
They're going to Denver shortly.
Right,
they're going
a bar
to start shipping into Denver. Or people can come to Oaxaca, como que la gente puede venir a Oaxaca. So they have an Instagram site. An Instagram handle called Fanny Cantini. So that's FANEKANTSINI. Fanny Cantini. And that's how you can find them on Instagram.
Do you know what Fanny Cantini means?
I do. I feel like Sosima should be the one to tell
you. It sounds Italian.
No, so it's in Chontal, in the language. Chontal, which is the region, right. Which is an ethnicity, but also the language. And it's basically a folk... sort of hero from the Chontal region called Fanny Cantini.
The bottle says Fanny Cantini, and then underneath is Tre Colibri.
Tres Colibri, which is three hummingbirds.
Right. That's the best I can do. We've taken some shots. Pete took some shots, some bottle shots, and we're going to put them on the website, tastingroomradio.com. Just understand, there were no spit buckets involved. We were tasting as we went and talked.
Yeah, we don't do that here.
This is not a wine event. We're in Oaxaca, and we're tasting with a maestro. Josima Oliveira and Jennifer Furlong are my guests, along with Pete Havercroft, who's along for the ride and was invited to share this table. That's the voice of Jennifer Furlong, who is our translator. What's the name of your company? You have a travel company?
Tlayudona. Tlayudona with a T, Tlayudona. Tlayudona.
Do you do tours?
We do cultural experiences.
Of course you do. It's not a tour. It's a cultural experience.
We don't do, we don't walk you anywhere. I mean, we immerse you in experiences.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13 on the Golden Mile. At Road 13, they are temporarily suspending tastings in the lounge and the castle and winery tours. And to Club 13 members and guests, Road 13 is accommodating your requests for purchase with minimal interruption. You can pick up your wines at the winery and load it into your vehicle by the staff, or they can arrange complimentary shipping by courier directly to your home or location of your preference. The goal at Road 13 is to make it as seamless as possible. You can find all the information you need and updates at road13vineyards.com.